This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. It's good to be with you once again for the new year. There is much to get caught up with in Virginia news from the first week in 2017. We'll take a look at the promise of and the barriers that remain for providing access to medical care in rural areas of Virginia through telemedicine, thanks to a project at UVA. There was a rally in support of the Affordable Care Act in Harrisonburg last week, and a big decision for residents of Buckingham County in favor of a key part of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. We'll also go along for a ride in an electric vehicle and take a look at that slice of the car market. And we've got a roundup of news from around the state, from Virginia Public Radio, and from WCVE, as we begin a new partnership with the public radio news team there in Richmond, just in time for this week's convening of the General Assembly. We'll hear all of that in the next half hour. But first, service dogs, you may be surprised to learn, are not necessarily professionally trained, but they can assist people with a wide variety of disabilities, including post-traumatic stress disorder. WMRA's Christopher Clymer Kurtz has the story.
Lucy started out as a good deed about 2 years ago when Bridgewater resident Erin Carricker responded to a call for a puppy rescue.
She was found in snow and ice with a litter of nine, and four had frozen to death, and five were okay, but in bad shape.
Lucy is part Beagle and part Border Collie, and Carricker thought she probably could be pretty useful.
I thought, well, I'll make her a therapy dog. I'll take her to help others, like at hospitals and whatever. And so I started reading, and there's such thing as a psychiatric service dog. And I was like, no way.
Now 40, Carricker has post-traumatic stress disorder, the result of 17 years of childhood abuse at the hands of her parents and others. Before rescuing Lucy, she had already been helped by an attentive dog, but only informally, as her previous dog Daisy, also a rescued Beagle mix, had no special training.
If I laid across the bed on my stomach because I was feeling panicky, she would lay on top of me, and that would help ground me. But I didn't teach her, it was just something natural that she did.
But Daisy wasn't a service dog, so Carricker couldn't take her along everywhere she went.
If I was struggling with PTSD, then I just wouldn't go out because I knew it would cause a panic attack, which could lead to a flashback, which could lead to severe dissociation, which could lead to me being just out of commission. I've been hospitalized many times, and that takes weeks to get through. And so I was living very carefully, which is not fun at all.
With Lucy, Carricker learned in her research, that could be different. The Americans with Disabilities Act says a dog qualifies as a service animal if it has been individually trained to do work or perform tasks directly related to a disability for an individual with that disability. A service dog vest or harness is required by Virginia law, but not by the ADA, which also does not require a service dog to have been professionally trained or have any sort of official certification. Sally Day is Development Director for Service Dogs of Virginia, a Charlottesville-based nonprofit accredited by Assistance Dogs International. I asked her how many service dogs are in the state.
Well, that's an impossible question to answer because the ADA does not want a registry of service dogs.
That, she says, is to avoid placing additional burdens on people already struggling with the obstacles of a disability. Under the ADA, as long as a dog is behaving and controlled appropriately, business owners can only ask a handler two questions: if the dog is a service animal required because of a disability, and what work or task the dog has been trained to perform. A new law in Virginia makes it a Class 4 misdemeanor to falsely represent a dog as a service animal, something Day has known to happen.
Absolutely. It's frustrating when you are working with people with significant disabilities, and there are people who are claiming their dog is a service dog, and it's their pet that they can't bear to be parted from. That's kind of hard to take.
Service Dogs of Virginia's two-year program trains dogs to help people with autism, diabetes, and physical limitations. Other programs offer guide, hearing, and seizure alert training, and more. Erin Carricker and Lucy went to a professional dog trainer that does not claim to train service dogs, but provided behavior training and helped Lucy learn tasks to assist Carricker when her PTSD is problematic.
Anywhere I signal her to touch, she will put both paws and she will press, and she'll leave them there until I say break and release. If I'm starting to get anxious to the point of dissociating, then I'm losing, like, reality. So if I get that tactile stimulation from her and I'm directing where it goes, then that pulls me out of the dissociation rather quickly. But she can sense, and this was not trained, she can sense when my anxiety is starting to rise and I'm doing nothing about it. And she will come and punch really hard with her front paws. Dogs aren't supposed to jump on people. But she will break out of how she knows to behave and punch me. And I'll think, oh, what? Oh, you're right. You're right.
Lucy's been Carriker's working dog for about 5 months now.
It's huge to have a way to help yourself. Because I'm on 10 medications. I don't want any more medicines. She's already, in those few short months, changed life drastically. Not that I guarantee I won't have struggles, but I have a plan. She's like my weapon, my plan.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
Rural Virginia still struggles with not having enough doctors, particularly specialists. But one University of Virginia program is trying to bridge that gap by providing a variety of telemedicine services. WMRA's Carol Lofton reports.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Lindsay Kennedy manages the telemedicine program at Bland County Medical Center in southwestern Virginia. She's standing in front of a monitor speaking with a colleague in Charlottesville.
I'm calling regarding your psych referral that you had submitted. I have an availability block available next Friday at 2 o'clock.
Okay, do you have anything sooner than that? I feel like this patient really needs to be seen as soon as possible.
The Bland County Clinic is one of 150 rural clinics that the University of Virginia works with to provide specialty care services to underserved areas. Most telemedicine systems are like video conference calls. They connect patients with remote doctors via the internet. Here in Bland County, remote means 3 hours away.
I think there's been a clear communication in the country that rural people need access to resources.
That's David Gordon Cattle, Director of Telemedicine for UVA. Since the program's inception more than 20 years ago, UVA's telemedicine has had more than 60,000 patient encounters in more than 60 different specialties.
And we have saved Virginians more than 16.4 million miles of travel.
Lindsay Kennedy says although travel is a big deal in rural Virginia, a several-hour drive is not feasible for a 90-year-old cardiac patient. Wait times are even more of the issue.
For endocrinology, the endocrinologist in our area accepts new patients every other Wednesday, and they're booked up pretty far out. So when you have a severe diabetic that has ulcers and is uncontrolled and their A1C is through the roof and you can't get an appointment for 6 months, that's not very beneficial to them.
Right now, most of UVA's telemedicine services are provided at clinical sites, such as Kennedy's Clinic, rural hospitals, health departments, and even correctional facilities. But Gordon Cattle's hope is that eventually the program will be able to put telemedicine services into people's homes.
We have to pay attention to the fact that if our goal really is to keep people home and well, and that's, I would love to see us be a nation where home and well is more important than a coronary bypass surgery, that we're going to have to be able to go to the home.
He says that the tools exist so that a person with a chronic condition or even an elderly patient who wants to age in place can be monitored at home. But Gordon Cattle says critics of in-home telemedicine are concerned about Big Brother, meaning the possibility of the U.S. government using the cameras to spy on and record information about users. There are also reimbursement issues to be worked out. If a patient is seen at home, how exactly is the provider paid?
The tools are all there. What's not there is the policy that enables us to reach into people's home. But I feel if we do this well and we get the support of healthcare providers and legislators, we'll move to the home.
Gordon Cattle makes the distinction that there are providers who will see you over the phone, but he says that is not the same thing as the video conferencing work that UVA does.
The reason being is because you don't see the patient. You don't have the patient's medical information in front of you. You're not able to do anything that remotely resembles an exam.
Gordon Cattle is optimistic about the future of telemedicine in rural healthcare. He says it not only provides care to underserved areas, but gives us a glimpse into ways to expand jobs, support regional hospitals, improve the health of the workforce, and support the rural economy. For WMRA News, I'm Kara Lofton.
As the 115th U.S. Congress convened on Tuesday, Republicans immediately began the legislative process to repeal the Affordable Care Act. In Harrisonburg, citizens gathered to call for Congress to fix, not nix, Obamacare. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz was there and has this report.
As the courthouse bell tolled the evening hour under Tuesday's overcast sky, about 70 demonstrators assembled by the Harrisonburg chapter of the nonpartisan Virginia Organizing circled Court Square.
The Affordable Care Act provides health care coverage for over 5,000 residents of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County, and if it were repealed, they would lose their health insurance.
Tim Jost spoke at the event. He is a retired law professor who writes for the health policy journal Health Affairs and lives just outside of Harrisonburg.
Health care should be available to all Americans. The Affordable Care Act brings us a little closer to reaching that goal. We shouldn't be heading in the other direction.
Eric Olson-Getty is administrative director at Our Community Place.
We are here because we believe we need to protect and strengthen, and I'll say expand, our current health care laws.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Eventually, we will all get sick, and so it's important that we as a society get together and fight for the kind of cooperation and coverage that we need to take care of each other.
Eleanor Held owns a small business in Harrisonburg.
Healthcare shouldn't be a privilege. It should be, you know, we all want good health.
The speeches concluded with a prayer by Stan Macklin.
It's cold outside, but it's cold what the repeal masters are trying to do.
And a time for phoning members of Congress. Tom Sawin tried to call.
It's ringing and ringing, and I think everybody's dying to know.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer Kurtz.
High-end electric vehicles such as Tesla's Models S and X are fast, powerful, glamorous, and also expensive. Christopher wanted to know more about the view from inside a more subtle and affordable electric car.
A few weeks ago, on a quiet and what may have been December's coldest night, Jonathan Lance Trissel and I stepped out of his warm house to go for a drive in his 2011 Nissan Leaf, waiting for us right next to a solar inverter and a meter.
The car's plugged in, so it's charging right now. So I'll unplug it.
When Lance Trissel started car shopping 2 years ago, he didn't think he could afford an electric car. But even then, just a few years into the Leaf line, the used market proved accessible. The car, he says, is a money saver, even if the batteries need to be replaced in a few more years. There's no transmission in the car and no oil to change. It has a regenerative braking system that minimizes conventional brake wear. And if he didn't have his own solar panels, he'd be paying the electric grid price for power, the equivalent of $1 a gallon for gas.
Do you want to drive?
The car even offers an eco mode, which makes the accelerator pedal more difficult to push down.
It discourages you from, like, just jackrabbit starts or whatever. Basically.
That's the fun part.
Yeah, exactly. You really should drive it at some point. I'll pull over at next convenient place.
The 2017 Leaf and comparably priced models such as the Ford Focus Electric and the Volkswagen e-Golf boast ranges of 100 or more miles. The anticipated Chevrolet Bolt, not to be confused with the Volt, Chevy's gas electric hybrid, will cost a bit more and get closer to 200 miles.
Oh, wait, now, how do I turn it on?
Oh, yeah.
And so now it's...
You just shift over and down. Yep. And now you're in drive.
This is weird.
You're ready to go,
yeah.
Right. Just have to press the accelerator.
Lance Trissel is more than fine with his older car's 70 miles range.
People have a funny idea of how many miles they drive or how far it is to places. In reality, around Harrisonburg, most people aren't driving 70 miles in a day.
Low rolling resistance tires are limiting in snow and ice, but swapping them for more weather-appropriate tires could halve the car's range. That and farmsteading mean that Lance Trissel also owns a gas-powered pickup truck, which can fill in when the car's range is inadequate. He's not the only electric car evangelist to also rely on gas power.
Charging will start automatically if the coupler is properly connected.
Alan Harned is the executive director of Virginia Clean Cities, which is sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy and promotes alternative fuel use. He owns a Toyota Prius for longer trips, but I met him recently in Harrisonburg where he had pulled his electric car, another of the state's 5,000, up to one of the several publicly accessible charging options in the city, this one a supercharging station in a busy shopping and dining area off of East Market Street.
So this is capable of fast charging an electric car in about 30 minutes.
Harned says that the biggest obstacle to electric vehicles isn't their range, it's inertia. And it's preventing jobs growth.
We're all very used to our vehicles. We're used to gasoline. My car, which runs on electricity, can be powered by all sorts of fuels in Virginia that generate a huge wide range of jobs.
Even though electric cars have their skeptics, the Union of Concerned Scientists says that, quote, over their lifetime, battery electric vehicles produce far less global warming pollution than their gasoline counterparts, and they're getting cleaner. Back on that cold December night, as I turn into Jonathan Lance Trissel's gravel driveway, the car speaks.
That's Harriet, we call her. She whispers to us in hushed tones about the state of our battery.
I pull Harriet up to her charger.
And so you just push the button and it's off.
Yeah.
And it's just as quiet as when it was on.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. Oh, the kids are really loud when there's nothing else to drown about.
Back in my old clunker, and for WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
At the end of December, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, issued its draft environmental impact statement for the proposed Atlantic Coast Pipeline and said that most adverse environmental impacts from the proposed natural gas pipeline that would cross Virginia could be avoided, minimized, or mitigated. A coalition of dozens of community and environmental groups, however, disagreed and harshly criticized the commission's report. FERC, which has the final say on interstate pipelines, is accepting public comment on the draft report until April the 6th. Dominion Energy is partnering with other energy companies on the approximately 600-mile-long project. Meanwhile, the Buckingham County Board of Supervisors voted late Thursday night to approve a compressor station as part of the pipeline. WMRA's Jordy Yeager was at that meeting and has this report.
The vote approved a special use permit for Dominion Power, allowing it to build and maintain a station on 68 acres in Buckingham that would compress natural gas as it flows through the proposed pipeline from the fracking fields of West Virginia to utility customers in North Carolina. The vote came on the heels of a lengthy four-hour public hearing. More than 150 people packed into Thursday's meeting, with 95 of them signing up to speak. The majority were opposed to the compressor station and the pipeline, citing health and environmental concerns. Ella Rose moved to Buckingham from Nelson County 5 years ago. Her home is the closest to the proposed compressor station.
Our lives should not be sacrificed. Our lives count, and I'm depending on you to make a decision that favors life and not financial interests, most especially Dominion financial interests. Thank you.
The compressor station is expected to bring the county nearly $9 million in tax revenue over the first 8 years. 36-year-old Jared Turner from New Canton helps build power stations in the state and said natural gas is the way of the future.
Furthermore, when a corporate giant like Dominion or any other corporate giant sets out to do something, they're going to make it happen one way or the other. Why not let Buckingham reap the financial benefits instead of passing it on to another county?
Federal approval of the pipeline is still pending. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
Well, I'm proud to announce that this past week, WMRA began a new partnership with WCVE Public Radio in Richmond. As a result, we will have access to more news from the Capitol, especially important as the General Assembly convenes this week. We look forward to bringing you the news from the very fine team at WCVE in the new year. In addition to our partnership with Virginia Public Radio, we think this new cooperative effort will provide an even more comprehensive service for WMRA listeners. And so, we begin the new partnership with this report. Republican Delegate Bob Marshall of Prince William County last week introduced a bill similar to the North Carolina law requiring transgender individuals to use the bathroom that corresponds with the sex listed on their birth certificate. From partner station WCVE, Craig Harper reports.
The bill would apply to all government-owned buildings, including public schools and the DMV. It would also require public school principals to notify parents within 24 hours if a child requests to be recognized as a member of the opposite sex. James Parrish, executive director of Equality Virginia, says if passed, the bill would be harmful to the community and hurt the state's economy.
Forbes magazine estimates that North Carolina has lost about $600 million because of HB2. There's many more priorities around transportation and education and jobs that our General Assembly should be dealing with and not targeting our transgender community.
The bill is not expected to become law. Similar legislation died in committee last year. And Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe has threatened to veto any bills he sees as discriminatory. Craig Carper, WMRA News.
As Virginia's General Assembly prepares to convene this week, Governor Terry McAuliffe is warning members not to introduce controversial bills that involve these kinds of social policy issues. He urged them to be tolerant and to focus on jobs, transportation, and education. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Houseman has more on that story.
The governor began his day at the University of Virginia signing an executive order making it illegal for any companies who do business with the state to discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity. And he vowed to veto a bill that would ban abortion after 20 weeks.
We will not tolerate any attacks on women's rights or LGBT rights here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I am very proud. I am 71-0 on vetoes. They have yet to override one of my vetoes, and let me be clear, they are not going to be able to override any of my vetoes in this upcoming legislative session.
Terry McAuliffe said Virginia was already welcoming new businesses that did not want to locate in Indiana or North Carolina, where lawmakers have passed discriminatory legislation.
I just announced a major company has moved to Richmond, 732 high-paying jobs, because they will not go to a state that discriminates against women or members of the LGBT communities.
At Equality Virginia, Executive Director James Parrish said the declaration was needed since the law allowed private firms to deny employment or housing to gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered people. Companies that don't do business with the state can still discriminate.
The private sector can still willingly fire and not hire people for being gay or transgender. But 17 out of the 18 Fortune 500 companies headquartered in Virginia have non-discrimination protections.
The governor also asked lawmakers to remove a ban on gay marriage from the state's constitution. I'm Sandy Houseman.
I'm Chanel Varani, and this is Our Island Universe. On January 7, 1610, an announcement was made that would forever change how we would view the cosmos. The letter announced a discovery with a new invention at the time. The discovery was three small point sources of light seen very close to the giant planet Jupiter. Over a period of the next several weeks, the observer found a fourth point source of light. He was now forced to conclude that these four points of light were orbiting Jupiter and not the Earth. Galileo observed the moons of Jupiter, that Venus goes through the same set of phases our moon goes through, that there are craters on the moon, and that the sun has spots on it, all with his telescope. Until this discovery, and for some 1,500 years, our ancestors accepted the model that said the Earth was at the center, with everything else, our moon, the sun, the planets, and the stars, orbiting around us. Galileo's ideas were so contrary that the Catholic Church found him vehemently suspect of heresy, was forced to recant, and spent the rest of his life under house arrest. It wasn't until 1992 that the Catholic Church recognized they made a mistake. And it all started 470 years ago on January 7, 1610.
Find all of our stories from the newsroom at WMRA.org. And be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio. And follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.